Blog Talk Radio.
Happy Tuesday, everyone. It's another lovely day in the neighborhood, and we are just getting started on the week. And what a week has turned out to be, but that's work. And we're not going to talk about work. We're going to talk about cemeteries tonight. My name is Patty, and you're listening to The Bone Collector. And occasionally, we do step a little bit off of the ghosts and goblins and things that go bump into the night to talk about some history. And if anybody really knows me, I am obsessed with cemeteries. They're one of my most favorite places to go. I'm obsessed with anything that has to do with the dead and getting their stories out there. And I kind of pride myself on having visited most of the cemeteries in this area, Rochester area. And I stumbled upon two of the cemeteries I'm going to talk about by chance, and one through a really old newspaper article from the early 1900s, I believe. But the one that's more near and dear to me is the first one I'm going to talk about. And, you know, occasionally I hit up these genealogy websites and I check to see the cemeteries and the listings of where they're at and to see if I hit every one of them in a town. And because, you know, you could be driving somewhere and see a really small cemetery. I've seen a couple of them just recently in the last couple weeks where you're driving down the road and it just kind of catches you out of the corner of your eye on a road that you've driven down millions and millions of times, and you see headstones. In fact, this past weekend when I was going to Caledonia, and I was taking Route 36 between Churchville and Mumford, and you go to this curve before you hit the thruway bridge on 36, and I'm going around the curve, and I've driven down that road, I want to say, just in the last couple months alone, I've driven on that road about 10 times, and don't I see out of the corner of my eye for the very first time on this small road on the curve, the top of this little hill at the intersection, I see just a handful of headstones. Now I'm on my way to a show. It's 6 o'clock in the morning. I don't have time to stop, but betcha you're going to believe it. I am going to go back there and see what that cemetery is, because these small outlying cemeteries like that aren't always listed on these genealogy sites for you to look at. So that's how I find most of the cemeteries, and they're usually ones that people haven't heard of. They're in rural areas out in the middle of nowhere. So when I was doing my little checklist to say, hey, did I hit all of these cemeteries? I came across in the town of Ogden, and more specifically in the village of Spencerport, which I lived in the village of Spencerport for about 17, 18 years. And know off the, you know, where everything is in the village because I lived in the village. And you've got Fairfield Cemetery right there on 259 at the curve. And then you have St. John Cemetery off some little side roads along the canal. So I was very surprised when I saw that there were three cemeteries listed in the village of Spencerport, which got my wheels turning going, there's not three cemeteries in Spencerport. I lived there. There is not three cemeteries. No way. got to be a mistake. So I do a little bit digging, and darn it, there are three cemeteries. Well, technically there are three cemeteries in the village of Spencerport. And I was shocked. So I call, one of my best friends, and she's lived in the village almost her entire life. And I say, hey, Joni, how many cemeteries are in the village of Spencerport? She goes, two. I go, no. She says, no, there are two cemeteries in the village. And we had this little discussion back and forth. And I go, no, there are three. And she said, where's the third one? And when I gave her the location of the third one, both of us are shocked. Both of us are outraged. Mm-hmm. But it is going to be something that we've been working on for the last year and a half, trying to figure out how to get the cemetery the recognition that it deserves. So that's going to be the first one I talk about. And it's located right in the village, right on 259. And let me tell you a little bit about the coming of becoming the village of Spencerport and Ogden and some of the people, because these people that I'm going to tell you about are people that are buried in that cemetery. So the first settlers came to Ogden, which is Spencerport. Spencerport's the village in the town of Ogden, but everybody calls it Spencerport, in 1803. And the most prominent names were Abraham Colby, John Webster, Daniel Spencer, but the very first one to set foot into the land of Ogden was a man by the name of George W. Wiley and his father Benijah. Now, the Wiley family played a very important role in the establishment of Ogden and Spencerport, and they built their homes right on the hill just south of the village. And they were responsible for some of the historic firsts in town history. So where their houses were located was basically where right around where Tim Hortons is and Hollingconda and all of that. So right there was where the Wileys had set up their homesteads. The first frame house and barn in the town was built by Benijah, and the first religious meetings were held in George's house in 1805. And in 1815, George had the first library in the town of Ogden inside his home, where he would let people come and borrow books, just like the libraries in the bigger cities. So it was kind of like the humble beginnings of the Ogden's Farmers Library. On the family farm, George's wife, Didiana, died on April 2nd, 1804, which made her the first of the Ogden settlers to die. And Anna Wiley, Benijah's daughter, was the first wife of Daniel Spencer, who was the founder of Spencerport. But most importantly, for the sake of what we're talking about, Benijah Wiley donated half an acre of his farmland for a town cemetery in 1808. And it was to be used, and it was used until the Fairfield Cemetery was established in 1858. So for 45 years, the pioneers that cleared and farmed the land, opened the stores and taught in the schools and stuff were laid in that half acre of land. And all of these people played an important role in the history of Spencerport. Asa Allen was buried there, and he was born in February on February 16th, 1797, and he moved to Clarkson in 1828, and he became a minister. And the entire family had come down with the fever, but Asa was the only one who didn't recover. And the fever turned into dropsy, and that was fatal. And on his deathbed, he asked if he was going to die, and when he was told that he indeed was going to die, he simply said, amen. And he was only 31 years old when he died, and he was buried there in that cemetery. William Banning arrived in Ogden on June 9, 1803, and he was responsible for planting the very first orchard in 1804. And when he died on September 17th, 1831, at the age of 56 years old, he was buried in that cemetery. Dr. John Cobb graduated from Castleton Medical Hospital in Vermont, and before he came to Ogden with his wife, Sarah, he served in the War of 1812 as a physician, and Cobb was the very first doctor in the town of Ogden. But he also had a greater connection with American history, and John Cobb was the direct descendant of Governor Bradford, who was the governor of the Plymouth Colony in 1620 and a passenger on the Mayflower. And John and his wife, Sarah, are buried in that cemetery as well. So the land surrounding the cemetery, the farmland, changed hands over time, and the cemetery was referred to as the Pioneer Cemetery or the Campion Wright Cemetery. And then, regardless of what it was called, the cemetery would hold the remains of the hardy and brave pioneers that started Ogden and allowed Ogden to flourish and grow into what it is today. But there was a time period in the mid-20th century that the importance of protecting the legacy and the memory of those who came before us was overshadowed by other, you know, pursuits, greed. I would say money, but that still is greed. But there were things that kind of clouded the vision, the judgment of people. On April 2nd, 1955, the headstones that remained, because of how they, what they used to carve the headstones and stuff, became very brittle. They didn't wear well with the harsh winters and the weather that we had. So the few headstones that had survived and were marking that were leveled in a deep blanket of soil was placed on top of it, and the record of their lives, because basically a cemetery and the headstones and all of that is a person's legacy. Pretty much, it's the record that shows that that person had lived and walked on this earth. So on that day, the blade of a bulldozer completely wiped the history of these people right off of the face of the earth. And the reason why they were demolished, and, you know, if people are mad because they know the people who did this, or they used to know the people, whatever your feelings are, I am sorry if these are not, this topic is very passionate to me. So, you know, if you don't like how this is going to go, you may want to turn it off. It was bulldozed, and those souls that we were the stewards of, their memory, were betrayed for the almighty dollar. In fact, the bulldozer bulldozed this cemetery so that it could have a appliance store built on it. I've seen pictures, the original pictures from the newspaper that put the story on the front page of the local section of the paper in 1955. There was a lot of land. The whole farm was bought. There was lots of land that this store could have been built on. I'm not quite sure exactly why that half acre that the cemetery was on was the spot that it would have to be. So we've been working on trying to get some kind of sign placed there. Now, I'm going to share parts of some of the articles, so the article from the Democrat and Chronicle that happened, that was put in the paper the day after, because then I want to talk about some discrepancies in this article. And it says, a century-old cemetery stirs Spencerport fuss. It was, but is not now. And as a result, Spencerport is all agog over an old cemetery. It all started about 6 weeks ago when the property in South Union Street, just south of the Mathos Brothers Ice Cream Company plant, was sold by Mrs. Marion Brown to R.I. Page, an appliance dealer in the village. The property contained an old cemetery whose history is buried so deeply in time that nobody has been about to find out about it. Page, who plans to build on the property, put a bulldozer to work grading the site last week. The bulldozing operations included leveling off the old cemetery, and there were immediate cries of protest. Villagers who took an interest rallied around to stop the Page operations. Those who did not take an interest said that they did not care what Page did with the old property. Town and village fathers who looked into the situation said they did not see what could have been done. There was talk of sacrilege and desecration. At least two veterans of the War of 1812 were reported to have graves in the old plot. There were about 15 in all, according to estimates. What headstones remained long ago gave up to the vestiges of lettering. Yesterday, the level plot showed no signs of a cemetery, headstones, graves, or a fence said formerly to have surrounded the cemetery. Regardless of protest, Page had gone ahead with his leveling project, reached yesterday at his place of business, and asked whether he leveled off the old cemetery. Page replied, "I guess I did." But he refused to answer further questions, seeing that he would not have anything to say. Mrs. Brown, who sold the property, was more voluble. She characterized the whole uproar over the old cemetery as a joke. "The cemetery has been there for years," she commented. "We held the property for 17 years, and when we bought it, lawyers made a thorough search and could find nothing about it. I understand the last burial there was 103 years ago. Others place it at more than 130 years. But I have never heard any sentiment expressed for the place. While we held it, the children used it to make a playground of it. They chopped down trees and started fires, and once they trimmed the pine tree up and made a totem pole of it. People thought then it was cute, and they just laughed about it. Some time ago, we offered the cemetery to the Historical Society and offered ground for a driveway to it, but nothing came of it. Only last night I was called by a member of the American Legion who wanted a list of those buried there, and where such a list would be, I don't know." Joseph B. Boyle, legal advisor for Monroe County, had been drawn into the controversy, but in a letter, town officials say that he does not feel his office has any responsibility in the matter. The last burial there, he said, was in 1823. While his office is still studying the matter, it is doubted if any state laws have been interfered with, Boyle indicated. "I have heard about the argument," said Charles H. Ballard, Spencerport Chief of Police, "but I don't think there's much to it. I understand the man, Page, had plenty of legal advice before going ahead." That Page had legal advice was vouched for by a town official who referred to remain anonymous. In the meantime, the village was waiting for one, start of a new building on the site scheduled for tomorrow, two, further word from Boyle's office as to the clarification of rather obscure state laws, and three, any action at all. What affected us the most was the nonchalant, and this is not the article anymore, this is us saying that it was the nonchalant, uncaring attitude in regards to the demolition of the cemetery is what bothers us the most. My biggest question is, if the town and village officials were waiting for Boyle's office to get back to them on whether or not the removal of the cemetery broke any obscure laws, why did they allow it to be demolished? And when I read the article, I found so many non-truths about the situation that I wanted to go over these, because this cemetery, you think that this is, oh my God, this doesn't happen, this must be a fluke, but you're going to find out that cemeteries are moved a lot. Now, I'm going to tell you that in none of these articles, there is no record at all, because from the time that he said he was going to build it there to the time that he bulldozed it, none of those bodies that were buried there, there's no record that any of them had been moved. So the fact that he bulldozed the headstone but left the bodies, it's very unsettling to me. So the first statement that I'm going to talk about is that, does it break any laws? Did this action break any laws? And according to Dangerfield versus Williams, in this is Washington, D.C. Circuit Court in 1906, a cemetery is not abandoned as long as it is kept and preserved as a resting place for the dead with anything to indicate the existence of graves, or as long as it is known and recognized by the public as a graveyard. The fact that for some years no new interments have been made and that the graves have been neglected does not operate as an abandonment and authorize the desecration of the graves, where the bodies interred in a cemetery remain therein, and the spot awakens sacred memories in living persons. So, the law, basic cemetery law, states that as long as people know that it is a cemetery, it is always a cemetery. So it is not abandoned as long as people know that a cemetery is there. So then there were other questions that came into my mind. And it is, R.A. Page didn't buy just half an acre of land that the cemetery was on. He bought a much larger piece. He bought the farm. And like I said before, why did he need to bulldoze the cemetery and put the store right on that spot? Why not in another part of the property he now owned and let that cemetery be? In the article, Marion Brown stated that she offered the cemetery to the Historical Society and they did not act on it. But the problem with that is that the Historical Society was not formed until years later. So there was no Historical Society to offer it to. Of course, there were citizens that had been interested in the history of the village and the town, but they were in no position to accept or undertake a proposition like that. It was also stated in the article that no one knew who was buried in the cemetery as there were no records, and that is untrue. In July of 1934, Mary Douglas and Myrtle Rice of Hames, of the Irondequoit chapter of the Daughters of the American Revolution, traveled to Spencerport, which at the time, even though that probably takes us 20 minutes by car, in 1934, that was a larger undertaking of a travel. And they would not have traveled there had there not been a interest by the Daughters of the American Revolution. So there is a written record of who was laid there because they transcribed all of the graves that were stone markers and stuff. And then finally in the original article stated that there were no veterans of any American war buried there. And unfortunately, this is also not true, that there was at least two U.S. veterans in the Pioneer Cemetery. You have Dr. John Cobb, who served in the War of 1812, and Benjo Wiley, who served in the American Revolution. And the headstone for Benjo Wiley was missing, but it was recorded in other documents that he had been buried there. But to me, what does that matter? This wasn't looked into until April 6th, an article showed up in the paper. Nobody looked into it until after it had already been demolished. And the fact that if a veteran was buried in the cemetery would have saved it from demolition in itself was kind of disturbing, because I believe that all the people that are laid to rest there had played a important role in the foundation of that community, and them being there buried at all, it should be just enough to keep it safe. So I just kind of wanted to, before I move on to the next cemetery, just to pay a little bit of respect to the people that we do know were buried there. According to Douglas and Haynes' list, there was Alan Asa, who died in 1828, William Banning in 1831, Walter Banning. He died at the age of 2, but it doesn't, his death date was illegible. Betsy Brewer, wife of John, died in 1823. Dr. John Cobb died in 1832, and his wife Sarah died in 1844. Lydia Dudley, wife of John, died in 1821. Augustus Dudley died in 1832. James Minor, 1831. Elizabeth Rowley, 1813. Eliza Warner, 1828. Wiley, the wife of Benijah, 1811. Diadema Wiley, the wife of George, and the very first death in the town of Ogden, 1804. Ruth Wiley, 1839. George W. Wiley, 1808. And his gravestone said, gave this half acre of land to the town for a burying place in the year of 1808. But we do know that Benijah gave that land. Yates, the last name was Yates, wife of S.P., 1826. And an unknown man died in 1819. And I just want to say, we can't let this be forgotten, and these souls need to be remembered. So my friend Joni and I are, like I said, trying to work on getting the cemetery properly marked. Now, there is a marker that R.I. Page placed at the back of the property on a hill behind a tree that says that this was a place of a cemetery. No one can see it. No one knows it's there. And it took me quite a little bit to find it, but it's there, I guess. So the next one that kind of fell to similar fate is the St. Mary Cemetery in Clarkson. And Father Edward McGowan bought 1.8 acres of land off of East Avenue in Clarkson in 1856 to be used as a Catholic cemetery. And it was used from 1868 to 1890, and that there were 246 people buried in that cemetery, 122 adults and 124 children. In 1892, Mount Olivet was formed, and that is on the Canal Road in Brockport. And after Mount Olivet Cemetery was formed, no more burials were performed at St. Mary's. And then in the 1950s, work was done in the cemetery under the direction of Father Lintz. And while some of the graves were moved to Mount Olivet and other cemeteries, not all of them were removed. And headstones were bulldozed. And the stones are now scattered and stacked and buried in the West Hedgerow, because that is where the all of the dirt was pushed. Now in 1990-1991, the town of Clarkson did a partial restoration of the cemetery from working with the Church of the Nativity, and they built a berm and stacked approximately 100 stones around it, poured a ridge of concrete to hold them in place, and it was rededicated as a cemetery on June 26, 1991. And there's only one stone that they say was never moved. And it is a monument for Fitzpatrick, and it's at the north end of the cemetery. So they found 25 in 2007, a confirmation class worked over on the berm where they were at Nahedro, and they found approximately 25 more. So they are working on getting this rectified, which is good, because that, it, to me, no cemetery should ever be desecrated like that. I mean, these are people's final resting places. This is where they're supposed to find peace in the afterlife, and that's not happening. So moving removals of cemeteries are not unknown. You get Rochester was not a large city in its first beginnings. It was very small. So the cemeteries were built close to the houses in there in at that time. But as the town expanded, the city expanded and grew bigger and bigger, and things needed to be built, and roads and everything else, you know. Urbanization, I get it. These cemeteries were moved, and the graves to Mount Hope Cemetery, for example, or to Holy Sepulchre Cemetery. However, as in a case in Illinois where gravediggers and people were contracted out in the 1800s to dig up the bodies and move them to other cemeteries, they were paid by the body. They weren't always completely honest that they had moved all the bodies. In fact, the one in Illinois, the man found that he was getting paid by the coffin that he moved, and he had children-sized coffins moved and put partial bodies in there, so he could take one person's skeletal remains and distribute that into two or three coffins so that it looked like he moved three bodies instead of the one, so he would get paid for it. Also, he could move empty graves or coffins and get paid for full ones. So it was a very unscrupulous, people were often hired out for jobs like that, because who wants to, I mean, even me, who's obsessed with the subject and learning all about this, you couldn't pay me to dig up a body and move it to another cemetery. That's beyond my interest. So just going on to rootsweb.com and looking at the Monroe County cemeteries and going to Rochester, because it goes town by town, you find that you have the Carthage Cemetery, which was on Tyler Street, was built over in before 1930. You have the East Cemetery, and the last burials were in the 1860s, and they were moved to Mount Hope Cemetery, which was on Indian Trail Avenue in 1873. It was also called Monroe Avenue Cemetery. You have the Friends Cemetery, which all of them were removed to Mount Hope Cemetery. You have Holy Family Roman Catholic Cemetery on Maple Street, used until 1913. The graves were moved to Holy Sepulchre. You've got Plymouth Avenue Cemetery, which is at the corner of Plymouth and Spring Streets, the first graveyard in downtown Rochester. The burials were transferred to Buffalo Street Cemetery and then later moved to Mount Hope. You have the Poorhouse Cemetery, which was discovered in 1984 just on a fluke, and that partially, they still believe that there could be 700 bodies still buried there. The ones that they did move have been moved to Mount Hope Cemetery. You have the St. Boniface Roman Catholic Cemetery that was moved in 1957 to Holy Sepulchre, and there was 1,100 burials there. St. Joseph's Roman Catholic Cemetery at Lyle Avenue and Mount Reed, they were moved in 1872 to Holy Sepulchre. You have St. Patrick's Roman Catholic Cemetery, which is going to be the last one that I talk about. They were moved. St. Patrick's was a small burial ground in 1838. Those graves were moved to a new cemetery on Pinnacle Hill, South Clinton and Field Streets, in 1935. The remaining graves there, they started slowly moving them, and they finally ended up in Holy Sepulchre, St. Peter and St. Paul Roman Catholic Cemetery. Moved to Holy Sepulchre, it was closed in 1876 for reasons of health. You've got the Stone Cemetery on East Avenue was moved to Mount Hope. West Brighton Rural Cemetery moved to Mount Hope. West Cemetery moved to Mount Hope in 1859. So you have, that's why if you go to the Mount Hope Cemetery and you see graves, Mount Hope Cemetery didn't officially open until around 1838, yet you have headstones in the cemetery that are dated well before the opening of Mount Hope Cemetery, because those are headstones and graves that had been moved from other cemeteries. So you've got this Baptist Cemetery in Pittsburgh that was moved to the Pioneer and Pittsburgh Cemeteries in 1880. The cemetery, the land that the cemetery was originally on, is now a gravel pit. So that brings us back to the last cemetery I wanted to talk about, which is the Pinnacle Hill Cemetery. So this one I found by accident with going through a newspaper article. And it says that St. Patrick's Cathedral, which was the first Catholic church in Rochester near High Falls at Plymouth Avenue and Platt Street, was built in 1823, and it was there, that church was there 11 years before the incorporation of Rochester. So before Rochester was founded, officially became a city, this church was built. It was the first Catholic church in the city of Rochester, and it was rebuilt three times to accommodate its growing congregation before they sold the property to Kodak, so Kodak could expand, and then the church was eventually demolished in 1937. And behind the original church was a small burial ground, and as the city grew, St. Patrick's board was told that the cemetery needed to be relocated, and those graves were moved to the corner in the West Cemetery on Buffalo Street, which is now West Main Street. And the West Cemetery was used until 1848. And then in 1859, they were moved to Mount Hope Cemetery to make way for the construction of St. Mary's Hospital. Now, it was later discovered that not all the caskets had been moved. But I've heard horror stories from friends that grew up on some of these streets where these cemeteries were, and the street would be dug up for some kind of repairs, and they would break into a casket. They would find a skeletal remains which was obvious that even, like I said, it was unscrupulous, and that people said that they removed them all, were paid to remove them all, and they didn't. But the corner of the West Cemetery could not accommodate all of the parishioners of St. Patrick's. So they had to be buried someplace else. And when Mount Hope Cemetery opened, the city of Rochester offered to sell the church a 5-acre plot, but they refused the offer. And a year later, they purchased 21 acres at Pinnacle Hill. So they didn't want to purchase a 5-acre plot in Mount Hope Cemetery to put this so that the parishioners had some place to bury. They wanted their own cemetery. So they purchased 21 acres on Pinnacle Hill, and for 72 years, thousands of people were buried at St. Patrick Cemetery, which is also called Pinnacle Cemetery. But when Holy Sepulchre on Lake Avenue was established in 1872, people decided they wanted to be buried in the new cemetery and not in Pinnacle Hill, so the numbers declined. And they say that the last person that was buried in St. Patrick Cemetery was on December 4th, 1900. So, obviously, if people weren't paying to be buried in the cemetery, they weren't selling any more plots, they weren't going to pay for people, they didn't have the money to pay for people to maintain the cemetery. So it became more sporadic, the things were being done there. The cemetery became overgrown, and it was a jungle of trees and vines that kind of went through the broken headstones. Now, some families didn't like the way that, obviously, I wouldn't be happy either if you went to visit your dearly departed and found that you had to chop your way through a jungle of trees and vines to get to their gravesite. So they opted to move the graves of their loved ones to Holy Sepulchre. And the remaining graves, which added up to 4,700, were all finally removed by 1839. So there seems to be a lot of shuffling of the dead in Rochester. And as a little joke, that's why there's so many haunted burial grounds and restless spirits in Rochester, because they have not been able to find peace. And so that, like most cemetery relocation projects, like I said, it is not believed that all of those bodies were removed, because only half of those plots were marked. And so there was confusion on whether an empty spot between headstones had somebody who the family couldn't afford to buy a headstone, or was that an empty grave, an empty plot, and there wasn't anybody there. So pretty much the people who moved the grave, the headstones, only moved the ones that had markers on them. So it, and also the church told people that in the cemetery association said, you have to move your family, their remains, that you have to move them someplace else. Not all the family members' family could be contacted. Some of these people didn't have any living family members to have their remains moved. Some people just didn't care. Some people didn't have the money to pay for that. So you've got unmarked graves. You've got people that didn't want to have their loved ones moved. So there were some that were left. Just to make an example of how disgraceful the cemetery was, I want to talk to you about a grave of one of our veterans, Captain Alan McMullen. 43 years after his death and his eventual interment, there was a discovery made. Snow and Rains, this is from a Democrat and Chronicle article in April 1907. Snow and rains have washed the earth about the grave until the skeleton is plainly to be seen. Bones of the feet and ankles protrude from the foot of the grave, and it is even feared that some of the bones have been washed away. Now, McMullen commanded Company K of the 140th New York Cavalry at the Battle of Wilderness in May of 1864, where he was mortally wounded. So he served in the American Civil War, and he commanded a cavalry from New York in the Battle of Wilderness, where he lost his life. And he, like many of these veterans and soldiers that I've talked about, you know, the graves in Spencerport, is they deserve much better. But it was this account written in that little blurb that was written in Democrat and Chronicle that led to a campaign in 1907 to remove all of the graves of servicemen from Pinnacle Hill, even though they only knew where a few of them were. And on May 28, 1907, the day after Memorial Day, Captain McMullen was reinterred at Holy Sepulchre Cemetery. Now, the upkeep or lack of led to rumors that the cemetery was haunted. And of course, I find an article in the September 10th, 1894 article. Reporter sees things that make him quake, ruin, and in on every hand, the ends of coffins protrude from the graves on the sides of the hill. Some observations of ghosts. It's appalling that things would happen. Now, this is an account taken the first bypass. He started upon a further tour of investigation. Great quantities of large wooden crosses, which marked the place of consecrated ground, were thrown over, disintegrated by age and the elements. Here and there are beautiful marble monuments fallen and broken into fragments. Hedges which surrounded a burial plot ever and anon had grown so thickly that they were impenetrable. Peering through the sunken graves and the white headstones could be the distinguished American flag torn by the wind and rain, told that an American soldier lay beneath the sunken sod. The path of glory led but not to the grave, and he is badly in need of repair. The once beautiful driveways and walks are nothing more but crooked paths over which vines have grown and twisted themselves until they were nearly obliterated. The solitude is oppressive and so thick that it can be cut only with a razor-edged knife. So, for me, and what I try to do and try to represent with what I do is through my writing, through my podcast, through my work that I do and create for the shows that I'm at, is to honor those who have come before us, to keep their legacies alive, to keep their stories alive. Because like I tell people, there is a saying that says that we die twice. The first time is when we physically die, and the second is when people stop remembering us, or as some people say, stop saying our name. So by desecrating these cemeteries, bulldozing to build a appliance store on top of, bulldozing because you're no longer using that cemetery, you are going to move the bodies, moving them for urban renewal, moving them for urban expansion, just plain neglect, to me is a horrifying thing to have to witness, because it is our job to keep those stories alive. We are given the responsibility to respect those who came before us, to reflect on their lives, and to make sure that their memory is kept alive. And in some cases, with stuff that's not put in history books, take in case in point, the cemetery in Spencer Port. There was a lot of digging that had to be done. In just single sentences in books that are over 100 years old about the town's history, to say William Banning planted the first orchard in Ogden. Had that sentence not been put in a book, that headstone that was on that grave was the only proof that William Banning walked this earth. So let that sink in. When you go to Mount Hope Cemetery, everybody has a story. Everybody had a life. Everybody had a purpose that their life served. Not everybody's purpose and everybody's story and everybody's life is documented in a history book. So those headstones are the only record that those people lived. Had it not been for those two wonderful women, Mary Douglas and Myrtle Rice Haynes from the Daughters of the American Revolution, we wouldn't have a record of those people, those names, those 17 names. We would not know that they were buried there. We would not know that they existed because we wouldn't be able to go and look up their history and look up their story and find out about John Cobb serving in the War of 1812 as a doctor, being the first doctor in the town of Ogden. We wouldn't even know to look them up, yet they're in a history book. There's a little bit about him in a book, but when you wipe those stones away, that record of them to even look into their lives is missing. So that's why I wanted to talk about preserving our cemeteries and preserving the stories for the future generation. I have been given the task of documenting family history for my family. And it's more than just dates. It's a story. It's everyday life that these people lived. Because for future generations, what good is it to know that this person, William Banning, died in 1831, he died at the age of 56. That doesn't tell us anything about William Banning. But that gives us a jumping off point to find out about him. So preserving cemeteries, keeping that legacy alive, that's our job for those who have walked this earth before us. Our job is to preserve their stories. End of story. That's it. Demolishing cemeteries? Definitely. That would be getting you fired from your job if it was any other job in this world. That would get you fired. So remember that when you see cemeteries there that are struggling with the ravages of time. If you've got a few minutes, stop, pull over, get out of the car, walk through them. I have done that and found some amazing headstones, amazing stories of people. And just knowing, even just if you look up a person and you find out that maybe she was a housewife and she raised 3 or 4 kids on a farm with her husband. That's no easy feat back in the 1800s, back in the 1700s. That was her purpose and that was her story, and that counts. Everybody's story counts in the history of the world. So that's my little soapbox thing about don't bulldoze cemeteries. Not move all the bodies when you move a cemetery. I am totally against moving cemeteries to start with. But what has to be done has to be done. But the ones that parking lots and buildings are put over, that's where I really have the issue. So
just remember, our job is to carry on the stories and the legacies of the people that came before us. So if you're looking for something to do, and I know I post this on my Facebook page and people have probably seen it a million times, if you're bored and you're looking for something to do, take a walk in a cemetery. Pick a headstone. Any of them. Any headstone will do. Pick a headstone. Write their name down. Write their death date. Their birth date. And then research them. Because life, your story is not the year that you were born till the year that you die. It is that dash that's placed right in the middle. That is where the story is. That is the meaning of our life. So, that's all I have to say on the subject. I think we have talked about this enough. And getting the story out of the Pioneer Cemetery in Spencerport is my main objective. I'm working on hopefully getting it blue markered. Hopefully we can get that taken care of. So next week, we're going to go back to work. We're still going to talk about death, of course, because this is me. And this is the Bone Collector. And it's always going to be about death, whether it's death and ghosts or death and cemeteries or just death in general. We're going to be talking about serial killers. And they're going to be some of my most favorite and some of the oldest serial killers in American history. So we are going to talk about H.H. Holmes, which is my absolute favorite serial killer in the whole entire world. We're also going to be talking about Lavinia Fisher, who was executed in, I believe it was Charleston, South Carolina, 1820, and the Mason Gang around the year 1800 in the Southern Appalachian Mountains, which some of you who really know that it is one of my favorite places in the whole entire world to talk about and to research. Although I do love where I live in the history here, I have a special affinity to the Southern Appalachian Mountains and my family. So, thank you for joining me on the Bone Collector and listening to me ramble on about cemeteries that have disappeared that were once there. Now, on a little side note, if you go up to Pinnacle Hill, where the cemetery used to be, I am told that occasionally the ground, Mother Earth, will give up some of the remains of the people that were left there. So if you find, you know, in a traveling around there, a piece of someone's remains, you know what? Just bury it back where you found it. Take a little hole, put in there, say a little prayer of peace, and, you know, give them some peace for themselves. All right? So that was Bone Collector tonight, and I hope you guys join me again next week when I talk about serial killers. All right. Good night. Have a wonderful week, and I will talk to you again Tuesday night at 8 o'clock.